I'll call this a lot of changes. What do you guys think?
Certainly, yeah.
Yeah, about the same.
Thanks there. Yeah.
Nothing phases you.
Yeah. Welcome to Ask an Atheist, 206-420-0997. If you're wondering why that's not our usual phone number, that's because we can't take phone calls this week. My apologies. We will try and keep up on the on our email feed. If anybody wants to make any comments live, you can go to askanatheist.tv and leave those comments. So, it's a new season, new changes. We're talking to you from a new studio, a whole new, it's been a big week. I think I've had maybe 7 minutes of sleep in the last 3 days. So if I start openly hallucinating, call like the media so that we can get as much out of this as we can.
Wait, we are the media.
No, I have other media.
Oh, okay.
Like right. Media with more people.
The lamestream media.
The lamestream media. Yes, indeed. Well, it's been a very interesting week. Dan, you saw a movie that everybody's been wanting to talk about lately.
I did, yeah. I saw Noah, and you know what? I really enjoyed it.
I did.
I thought it was fun. It was just this great sort of bizarre fantasy. I was almost expecting a cameo from Tom Cruise in a spaceship. I mean, it was a lot of fun.
Isn't a spaceship showing up in Noah pretty much your Hunter from the Future?
Yeah.
You're going to like mix your sci-fi, you're gonna mix your fantasy.
A movie with Reb Brown as Noah? I would go to that in a minute.
A lot of screaming, give him a machine gun for no reason. Yeah. I'm all for it. I would see a Reb Brown Noah movie.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I didn't really care about it. I'm not really against it. People are allowed to make movies about whatever they like. Mm-hmm. I mean, I thought the Hitchhiker's Guide movie was nice.
Yeah.
And some people were like, did it, well, you, I think you know this, the Noah story a little bit better than I. Did it stick fairly
well.
Close to the story?
For the most part. I mean, there really isn't a lot to the Noah story as far as scripture goes.
Right.
And so they definitely took some artistic liberties. I mean, it's kind of like, they made a 2.5-hour movie out of a short story, iRobot.
Yeah, yeah.
And developed this whole other plot line. And they kind of did the same thing with Noah. And they involved rock giants. And they involved a big, like, Lord of the Rings style battle.
Yeah.
They treated it basically like any other myth that they made a movie about. I mean, it was as true to the Bible as like
as the Bible is true.
Yeah, yeah. It was as true to the Bible as like the Thor movie was to the Norse paganism.
Why did you
thing.
Have to bring up Isaac Asimov turned into a Will Smith vehicle?
If it's like the Thor movie, does that mean
you,
that Samuel Jackson shows up in a post credits thing and tells Noah that he's going to join a team of other biblical heroes?
Oh man,
that I would. Well, no, that's Bible Man. I mean, we've seen that already.
You know what? I didn't stay through the credits, and now I'm wishing I did. My favorite part about the movie was that they completely displaced it in time. They weren't trying to say, at least with the film itself, that this happened 4,000 years ago or whatever.
Right.
Because they were involving modern things like welding masks and corrugated iron. And while the biblical Noah story takes place in the Bronze Age, here there's a scene where Tabul Kain is wearing a welding mask and blacksmithing. I mean, this isn't the Iron Age.
I thought Tabul Kain was from Mortal Kombat.
No, that's Shao Kahn.
Okay.
You will die.
Shao Kahn.
Wasn't Shao Kahn from The Jungle Book?
No, that's Shere Khan.
Oh.
And he was also in Tailspin.
Okay, which, I think we've had enough popular references for one day.
I have one more popular reference, and this is just as a greater context.
Okay.
This is the second time in so many months that Russell Crowe has played somebody who's the only man that knows that the world is going to blow up, and he has to load people onto a ship.
That's true.
To get them to escape it, because he played Jor-El, Superman's dad in Man of Steel.
But I'm pretty sure I'm pretty sure he doesn't upload himself into a computer and becomes a trans Kryptonianist. In Noah.
Dad.exe.
Dad.exe has performed an illegal... Yeah, that's it.
He wasn't really a transhumanist in Noah, but he was definitely present. I mean, he was the villain of the movie. Like, he was, you know, Tabul Kain was like, you know, the bad guy, but Noah was really... He was really the bad guy. He was really the actual bad guy. I mean, the biggest moral controversy in the movie, Noah's the bad guy.
Yeah.
And eventually he you know, comes around and becomes a good guy that is not going to be forgiven anytime soon for his bad guy stuff. I don't want to give away too many spoilers or anything.
Biblical spoilers.
But really, he was like the best magical bad guy in an Emma Watson movie since Voldemort. That's
fantastic. I think the real story here is that somebody who's often on an atheist show thought Noah was pretty good.
I thought it was really fun. Yeah, and all granted, right. I went and saw it at Cinnabar on $5 Tuesday, but
fair
enough. I wasn't going to pay full price. But
well, let's move
but
on
it
to
was so much fun.
Let's move on to some actual news. Why don't
okay.
we? this one comes out of Saudi Arabia, and thought crimes are deemed terrorism in new Saudi laws. Mm. New laws approved by King Abdullah in Saudi Arabia call for prison sentences of 3 to 20 years for any form of terrorist activity defined as calling for atheist thought in any form or calling into question the fundamentals of the Islamic religion on which this country is based. Representatives of Human Rights Watch noted that while Saudi authorities have never tolerated criticism of their policies, the new regulations turn almost any critical expression or independent association into crimes of terrorism.
That's what's so amazing about this, but the idea that we see, not just with these blasphemy laws, is that, but equating it with terrorism takes it to this whole new level where terrorism, of course, is acts of violence against people's bodies in the name of ideology.
Yeah.
Now we're saying acts of violence against people's feelings because of reasons of ideology. That's
right.
Insane that my feelings are something that have to be protected at all costs.
Well, we're talking about Saudi Arabia, where their record on this one is not great, to say the least.
Yeah, there's enough executions by sword.
Yeah, but we're at the point now where even identifying as an atheist makes you a criminal in Saudi Arabia.
That you're not allowed to have an opinion.
Right. And actually, you know, for those Christians out there, I think being a Christian in Saudi Arabia also has sort of a similar problem, doesn't
by
it?
By simply saying, again, like they said, calling into question the basis for which our society is built, saying that you're a Christian is in effect saying that Islam is not true.
Yeah.
That's what the funny thing when people come after us by saying, how dare you say that isn't true? Saying a positive belief of any kind that contradicts somebody else's positive belief is in effect telling them that their beliefs are false.
Fantastic. I don't even know where to go from here.
I'm a little bit flattered that they consider it terrorism. Like us atheists, you know, we who like to argue on the internet are so scary that just voicing an opinion is equitable to terrorism for some reason.
It does give you that artificial bad guy feeling.
Yeah,
yeah, like you're the cool bad guy at school until you realize that people are going to be murdered
right.
because of this law.
Yeah, and that's the awful part, of course.
It's the same thing with North Korea. I think North Korea is hilarious until I realize, because of all that stuff, how many people are starving.
That this sort of ludicrousness is only possible built on a foundation of human misery.
Yeah.
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 But that's the thing, too, is that they're so afraid of the argument. That to me says that there's a real insecurity about the strength of their argument.
Right.
That they know that it can't withstand. If you really believe that you have this revelation of absolute truth from the creator of the universe and it is irrefutable, you should not be afraid of anything.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly not an opposing argument, because the more you drag that argument out into the open, not try to push it into the darkness, but you pull it out into the open, it would only be proven false.
Yeah.
This is why scientists are not afraid of creationism. They're happy to drag it out into the public to show you how ridiculous it really is. And this is why people like Ray Comfort try to push opposing views off their website and ban people like that from their Facebook pages, because they know their arguments will lose if there's an open line of communication.
Absolutely.
It's the same reason I don't store sugar cubes in the sink.
I mean, people like Ray Comfort won't put it that way, clearly, because, you know, like he nitpicked what you had to say, and that was why he wasn't going to put our episode on his website.
And thankfully, he's not killing people.
Yeah, but he's not killing people. That's the other side of it. Speaking of killing people, that's not a segue I particularly like, but it kind of works. There's a potential for the British Columbia measles outbreak to spread to Washington State.
Oh, good.
Yes. A woman who contracted measles in the British Columbia outbreak traveled extensively around Western Washington between the end of March and the start of April. Public health officials worry about a potential outbreak similar to the ones in British Columbia, California, and New York this year. Because children are inoculated against measles at 12 months and 4 or 5 years, infants and toddlers are especially susceptible to falling ill, along with older unvaccinated individuals. Low-vax clusters in the developed world generally arise because people opt out for two reasons: faith that God will protect them from disease, or fears that vaccines will cause harm.
Unfounded fears.
Absolutely unfounded fears. I mean, we were talking about the pertussis outbreak last year. That killed people. Yeah. I mean, with the anti-vax movement, you have all this vague stuff, like there's mercury in this, and there's something else in that, and, Alex Jones saying that vaccines are mercury and cancer, and that's how they're going to get the population down to 500 million people, and you see all the hand-waving.
You're doing a great job with that. The population continues to grow.
Yeah, I know. But the fact of the matter is, we don't have to do hand-waving. We don't have to, say, make these vague, demagogical comments. We can say, in 2014, and in 2014, people are dying because you guys have a bad idea of what science is.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And, you know, vaccines are cheap, and they're effective, and they're why we don't have smallpox anymore. And it's just, you know, I can have the nice, fun bar conversation about religion. Mm-hmm. I can go back and forth as to whether or not religion is a force for good. I mean, I clearly don't agree,
Spoiler,
but that's
no.
a debate I want to have. This vaccination one, I can't respect someone who will allow people to die for their conspiracy theory.
This is the kind of privileged position that you can only get into in the first world, because we are living in a world that is enjoying the fruits of science. And the fruits of science means people aren't dying as babies in large numbers from diseases that we conquered decades ago through vaccination. And now that we think, oh, well, measles isn't that bad. I don't know anyone who died of measles. All I know is you get dots on you. It must be like chicken pox.
Right.
And then you're like, oh, that can't be so bad. You can take that. Let's have a measles party. You know what a measles party is called? A mass grave.
Yeah.
Because we don't respect what these diseases can do anymore.
There's a lot of symptoms that used to just kill thousands of people every year that we just take a pill for now. And because the general health of everybody is being raised through, you know, modern medicine, things that used to be incredibly horrible just aren't anymore. I mean, historically, diarrhea killed a lot of people through dehydration. And
even just the flu. I mean,
other
every
infections.
Year we have some people dying from the flu, but it's not the severity that it once was.
Yeah, and through sanitation and modern medicine, these things which used to be an omen of death are now just things that happen, and you just get on with your life. And now you're saying that these things are going to make your life worse somehow?
And you get these same people who are pushing this garbage, who are saying things. We need to move back to a more all-natural, older position that we were in.
Yeah,
back when we died in our 30s, mostly from abscessed teeth and childbirth and all sorts of other things that are not a problem anymore because of, say it together, modern medicine. Yeah. So it's amazing how much we act as if these things that have expanded our lives, that have made our quality of life better on every possible qualification, we act as if these are impediments keeping us away from, you know, enlightenment and happiness. Like there's some magical land that we all lived in when we were all being killed by giant cats and diseases.
Yeah. Thank you for mentioning the cats.
Crushed rocks. We were killed by everything. Life sucked for a long time before we figured out how to manipulate our environment. And we're going to act like this is a bad thing, like this thing that's made our lives better is the thing that's killing us? Screw you, anti-vaxxers.
Well, the beat goes on. And so do the anti-vaxxers. Chili's is going to raise money for an anti-vaxxer group. The good news. In honor of National Autism Awareness Month, Chili's restaurants will be raising money by donating 10% from every bill. The bad news. They'll be donating that money to the National Autism Association, an organization that repeats the long debunked myth that childhood vaccines trigger autism in some children. Over 1,200 Chili's restaurants will participate in the program, which will continue through April. There is overwhelming medical and scientific consensus that there is no causal relationship between vaccines and autism, including numerous studies by the National Centers for Disease Control. The National Autism Association website comes just short of recommending that parents not vaccinate their children, but do link the National Vaccine Information Center, a powerful anti-vaccine lobby. The NAA also sponsors the Age of Autism website, which has the text, "Yes, vaccines cause autism," on its masthead. Here's one of the biggest gotchas right here. One of the things that you most notice is that these anti-vaxxer organizations give themselves really official-sounding titles. Scientologists are known for doing this. The National Vaccine Information Center? That sounds something governmental, doesn't it? That sounds like something you can trust. Guess what?
No.
And, you know, there's one thing that I want to just sort of attack right away here. The idea that we're still vaccinating because it's, you know, this great big profitable conspiracy of some kind. I've had a friend who was in intensive care for almost a month.
Yeah.
Intensive care costs $8,000 a day. thousand a day. If we really, if the medical industry really wanted to just make a profit off people and not care about their health, they wouldn't vaccinate people. They would let them get sick and wind up in intensive care. Vaccinations have a very small profit margin, even when you consider the entire population compared to what it takes to care for someone who has contracted a severe case of, say, measles.
Plus this all natural healing stuff. These people aren't handing this stuff out like Johnny Appleseed. They're making a profit too. These are corporations with lobbyists, yeah, the same as the medical industry. You know what the difference is between the real medical industry and the garbage big placebo medical industry? One of their products works, and one of them has products that basically are like the magic beans that you're supposed to plant in your backyard.
I'm remembering that change.
If the echinacea hasn't prevented your cold, you just didn't believe in it hard enough.
Right. I'm remembering the change.org petition to Jimmy Wales, the Wikipedia guy, and he's like, no, you're science, you know, have science, and then maybe we'll do a better job of this.
But this is the attitude, and the creationists do this as well, which is they demand an emotional appeal to fairness rather than saying we have the facts. It's not fair for you to treat my idea that the world is flat unfairly. It should be given fair treatment on your website and treated like I'm a serious adult with serious ideas, so take me seriously. No, you have to prove this thing through a very stringent process where you have to prove your ideas are not garbage.
This is Ask an Atheist, 206-420-0997. We're going to go into a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about Mr. Snuffleupagus.
Secular humanism is a non-theistic view of the universe built on a foundation of reason, science, and democracy. Humanists support intellectual freedom and critical thinking, and we hold that human beings are autonomous centers of moral development. The Humanists of Washington is the oldest humanist organization in the state and offers a community of free thinkers who educate the public and celebrate life. For information on how you can be a part of the humanist activities in the Puget Sound area, become a member of the Humanists of Washington today. Visit humanistsofwashington.org.
Out of the briny depths of the internet comes a comic book podcast so powerful it cannot be contained by a single continent. Mike and Paul save the universe.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Paul Rudd.
If you're an unsatisfied comics fan, we want to help you find better comics.
And if you've never picked up a comic before in your life, we want to help you find what could be your new favorite thing.
On Mike and Paul Save the Universe, we love the bejesus out of comics, and so should you.
Find us online at mikeandpaul.com.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Doran.
And we host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. We invite a rotating panel of our friends over to talk about science fiction, comic books, movies, horror, animation, professional wrestling, video games, and George freaking Lucas.
It's a warts and all look at popular geek culture, where we tip sacred cows and use profanity while arguing about children's entertainment.
Think of it as the McLaughlin Group for nerds.
Find us online at radioversusthemartians.com.
So you're on your Monday morning drive, and someone on Ask an Atheist says something that really, really gets your goat. You want to talk, you want to yell, you want to scream, and clicking the shiny red candy-like button just isn't good enough. Good! Call us! Leave us a message! Call Ask an Atheist at 206-420-0997 and vent your spleen now and for the future! That's 206-420-0997 and wait for the tone.
If you enjoy the programming we create on Ask an Atheist, please make a contribution with us. Your sponsorship keeps our show in the air and improves the quality of our broadcasts. Don't make us beg. Please go to askanatheist.tv and contribute today.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 206-420-0997. You'll notice that's not the usual call-in number because we don't have phones today. Sorry about that. But I do have a lot of people I want to thank because we've been remiss in the last few weeks with everything going on. I'd like to thank Andrew from St. Louis, Missouri, Lawrence from Grand Junction, Colorado, Cece from Milton, Washington, that's nearby, Scott from Langley, British Columbia, hey Scott, Bill from Virginia Beach, Virginia, who writes, sent my yearly donation today. I'm an atheist who has a tight grip on his wallet. I donate because I'm impressed with what all of you are doing. I want this movement to succeed. Religion is such a harmful force in the world. Keep up the good work. If you'd like to help keep the lights on and like what you hear and the, I'd like to hope, improving quality of the show, you can go to Ask an Atheist. TV, click on the shiny candy red button,
ding,
And it'll take you right to our PayPal page, and every dollar you give goes directly to show production. So last week we talked about Becky's favorite story, and I'm almost sorry Becky's not here, because Becky was practically writing fan fiction about this in the studio about the girl who wanted to get a state fossil for South Carolina, I think. So Mammoth's origin still attributed to biblical creation and proposed Carolina code. Last show, we reported on third grader Olivia McConnell's efforts being held up by a South Carolina lawmaker who wanted to interject Bible verses in a bill naming the woolly mammoth as a state fossil. That amendment was ruled out of order by the lieutenant governor, and another state senator withdrew his objections. This seemed to suggest that Olivia's original bill would indeed pass and become state law. However, the most recent version now that was unanimously passed, reads, "The Columbian mammoth, which was created on the sixth day with the other beasts of the field." Wow, that was almost death metal. "Is designated as the official state fossil of South Carolina and must be officially referred to as the Columbian mammoth, which was created on the sixth day with the other beasts of the field." Wait, you have to say that whole thing so you're in like the Natural History Museum and you walk up to somebody and you go, "This is the Columbian mammoth, which was created on the sixth day and with the other beasts of the field."
Yeah.
That's not how you end animals. Come on, people.
What's wrong with us?
I'm not really sure what even to do with this one. I mean, yeah. It's
you can vote that one out of office is what you can do.
Yeah. First things first.
Well, we can, but people can.
Let me know who it was. I'll send him $10 to whoever's running against him. It could be a LaRouche. I'll give him $10.
First, I want to claim copycat, because the Columbian mammoth is also the Washington State fossil.
Oh, is
and
it?
We've got double fossils, because the Washington State gemstone is petrified wood. Which is also a fossil. Yeah.
Wow. So we're big on fossils here, apparently.
We are big on fossils. And actually, today's moment of science is not exactly about fossils, but certainly there's a mention of mammoths.
Cool.
Today I want to talk about the Pleistocene extinction, but first I really want to restate the fact that the Columbian mammoth, Mammothus columbi, is known from radiocarbon dating to have existed in North America as much as 100,000 years ago, not the 6,500 years. And I would say that roundly refutes the idea that they were created on the sixth day, as State Senator Kevin Bryant would have us believe. Now, you may not know this, but as recently as 13,000 years ago, North America was home to tons of species of megafauna, that's just huge animals, over 1,000 kilograms, including mammoths and some smaller animals like the saber-toothed cats and giant sloths. We even had camels and horses and lions in North America. But by about 12,000 years ago, they were all extinct here. So what happened? There are several theories, and I'm going to outline a few. The first is the climate change theory. About 13,000 years ago, the glaciers were receding from most of North America, so maybe the warmer weather and the more defined seasons made conditions inhospitable to some of the larger Pleistocene mammals. But then again, these megafauna had already survived 22 ice ages, so why would the 23rd be so different? Well, some other stuff was happening at the time. About 13,000 years ago is also the time that humans appeared to have arrived en masse in North America, and some believe that humans may have hunted these larger animals to extinction. But there is certainly some doubt as to whether humans had the capability to do this with the hunting technology that they had at the time. But it's hard to deny some of the correlations here. If we look at Australia, we'll see that the giant birds, the giant varanid lizards, and the mega kangaroos, I'd love to see that, they all vanished from Australia about 50,000 years ago, which is exactly the same time that humans first arrived in Australia and began hunting and starting large-scale fires. But then, of course, there's Eurasia. Eurasia also experiences losses of their megafauna. The cave bear, the woolly rhinoceros, woolly mammoths, and Irish elk, they all disappeared at about the exact same time as the extinctions in North America. But that doesn't correlate at all with the arrival of the first humans in Eurasia. They'd been there for quite a long time before that, but like almost everywhere else at the time, Eurasia was experiencing a massive climate change, with warming air and water and receding glaciers. So it's kind of hard to say if either humans or climate change could have been the single cause, or maybe even a combined factor. But the third theory, and my favorite because it is just so darn scary, is the hyper disease theory. So maybe it wasn't human weapons, but maybe it was their passengers that caused this extinction. It's possible that a germ or a pathogen that was spread by humans or the dogs or rats or lice or ticks or fleas that came with the humans caused an epidemic disease that the megafauna had no immunity to and just couldn't survive. In fact, there was a study published in 2001 that found evidence in 45% of mastodon bones of one of the few diseases that can be transmitted directly from humans to other animals, and that is tuberculosis. This often lethal disease can infect numerous species, from humans to sea lions, cattle, pigs, deer, bison, badgers, and even snow leopards. This ability to jump from species to species so readily makes it a prime candidate for megafauna extinction theories. Even still, the cause of the Pleistocene extinctions in Eurasia, Australia, and the Americas may remain a mystery for quite some time. It's likely that it wasn't a single cause, but the combination of all of the above – climate change, hunting, disease, and maybe even some other factors we've not yet imagined. And what about Africa and Asia? In both of these places, there's still plenty of species of living megafauna. We have giraffes and elephants and rhinoceroses, big cats and hippos, and plenty more. But you might have noticed something about those animals. Elephants, rhinos, and tigers, they are presently endangered. And if they go extinct this time, there's going to be no doubt as to the species responsible. It's us. It's Homo sapiens. And in fact, we're currently experiencing another mass extinction, and maybe the worst one yet. Around the world, the climate is changing, the ocean is acidifying, new diseases are spreading to vulnerable species, animals are being hunted to extinction, and habitats are being destroyed. The blame for this rests squarely on our own shoulders, and it's what we're now calling the Anthropocene extinction, which means the human-related extinction. While we are most certainly the cause, we are also the only ones who can stop it. And I would just ask our listeners to take a little bit of time to think about that and to think about how you can help.
Fantastic. Well, not fantastic. I like your work. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Dan. But yeah, wow. I remember reading something scientific in a science-y thing that said the average size of an animal during the day, one of like the Jurassic or something like that, was an elephant. And now it's the size of a house cat?
Yeah. Animals over time have just sort of gotten smaller and smaller. And maybe a big cause for that is gestation time and just sort of the rate of reproduction. In fact, the animals that we are driving to extinction fast, the fastest, are those that have the lowest reproduction rates.
Right.
Basically, and just an animal that reproduces slowly has less chance to bounce back from any sort of catastrophe.
And elephants have a really long gestation time as well.
They do, yeah.
I guess that makes sense, because if you have something that is really large, it's going to take more mass to make another thing which is really large, which would be a problem if you need to rebuild your population quickly because you got a mass of people coming in from the north.
Exactly. Yeah, it's one of the things that makes it so easy to damage the populations of very large animals.
But that's another disease thing. Is it the leading theory, or is it just your pet theory?
Hyper disease. I really think that these three are sort of, in constant contest with each other. Mm. And I suspect that, like most things, it's never going to come down to a single cause. It'll probably be...
Unless it's a meteor.
Unless it's a meteor.
Actually, the thing with the meteor, even in the dinosaurs, that I've heard is that even before the meteor hit, the dinosaurs were already on their way out. And it was a long, drawn-out process, but they were dying off.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
The different thing about the Pleistocene extinction, as opposed to previous mass extinctions, is that it just happened so fast in North America and in Eurasia. I mean, 1,000 years to lose all of these tremendous megafauna is just such a short time. And while the climate was changing, it wasn't changing quite that fast. But humans were definitely the new factor in North America. And it could have been that people were coming across the Bering Sea land bridge at this time. Maybe there was an epidemic sweeping across Eurasia, and when the humans crossed the land bridge, they brought it with them to North America.
Speaking of which, I'm kind of curious. There was supposedly, according to genetic information, there was a time when the population of human beings might have dwindled down to something like 30,000 or 10,000.
I've heard that too. I can't say that I've studied it very thoroughly, but I can definitely make it a topic in the future.
Yeah, I was just kind of wondering what was the difference in time between that and then all of these, all of these larger animals going extinct. So.
If I recall, I'd heard that was as recently as 30,000 years ago, but I don't know exactly off the top of my head.
Fair enough. I did all this stuff about stuff. I don't know. Man, the science stuff, it's not my thing, but not my forte, but yeah. I love hearing about it. So now we can move on to something that is more my forte, which I think is making fun of stuff. John from Columbus, Ohio writes to us, why is it that when these phony shows about encountering ghosts air, why doesn't anyone address the issue of these clothed ghosts? I would love for someone to ask these ghost investigators why is it that a Civil War soldier is in full uniform when the apparition appears, and why is he or she not naked? How is it that garments always seem to come back from the afterlife along with their owners?
I want to point out a reasonable exception here.
Okay.
The pop artist Kesha was definitely into naked ghosts.
I believe we covered that one. Yeah.
Something I noticed with these stories is that if the Civil War soldier wasn't wearing a Civil War uniform,
yeah.
you wouldn't know where he
you wouldn't
from.
Know it was That's a true. Civil War.
You
know?
That you could wear what a civilian would wear, and you'd probably have, what, a 100-year period where that ghost could be from?
Right.
Why is it they're always wearing the most distinctive outfits that cuts them? Like, he's dressed like a cowboy, or he's dressed like a pharaoh, or he's... It's always something that you can pin down on. It's always somebody important that has a distinctive look. It's like, oh, well, that's the King of England. It's never just like, that's a peasant. He could be from any span of about 2,000 years, because he's wearing burlap sacks tied with rope around his feet.
Right.
And he's covered with pox.
I want to go back in time now to the era where everyone wore sheets and chains all the time. Like, that's just...
Sheets and chains.
Yeah, that's the typical ghost costume, right? I mean,
yeah,
if they come back in their Civil War uniforms. There must have been a time when everyone was wearing sheets
Romans
and chains.
In a metal forge, maybe?
I'm curious.
Are you stuck coming back as a ghost?
Perhaps
in whatever...
ancient Greek slaves. I don't know.
Perhaps, yeah.
If you die, do you stuck in the outfit you died in? Is that the idea? Because I get the Civil War soldier. Obviously, he was shot or something. Or you know, got a... baton in the stomach or
I'm
something.
I'm going to die in a penguin Bayonet. Costume, aren't I? So, it's going to be something like that.
But there's a lot more people just dying
or even
in
worse,
clothes.
Just a top half of a penguin costume.
You're going to die in a bird suit?
Yes.
Are you suggesting you'll return as a poultrygeist?
Heyo! That you know what? You know, that's a good one. I'll give you a pass on that
Thank
one.
You.
Yeah, that is a heck of a butt.
I think the real answer to John's question is because it's all bunkum.
Right.
And they have to say that they understand what it is that they're seeing. Because if it's just some random guy running around naked, they can't pretend that they know something.
Right.
And if you throw clothing or a costume on this ghost, you can pretend.
So we actually got an email from Scott from Langley. He sent us a link saying that Chili's canceled their fundraiser after being made aware of the vaccine issues.
That's the thing.
Hey,
again,
good for them.
Yeah.
You mentioned the idea of them having a confusing title. I guarantee you it isn't that the folks at Chili's knew what this organization was. I think they just went off the title. That sounds like an organization that does good work, but they have a deceptive title. And people who sell junk science are all about deceptive language.
Absolutely.
They always use terminology that makes it sound like they're part of a science group. Like you mentioned Scientology before. Also, any organization that people like the Moonies.
Christian Science Reading Rooms.
Or any sort of organization like a cult or a church or Deepak Chopra New Age stuff that says that they're part of some spiritual science malarkey.
Right.
That's the kind of stuff where they use big words, not because they have to describe big complicated ideas, but because they want to complicate the thing to the point that you don't understand it. Don't worry. It's science.
They're striving for legitimacy by adopting our vocabularies.
Well, yeah. It's I believe that's called cargo cult science.
Cargo cult science, yes.
Yeah.
We were just talking about that.
I remember that there was a Q&A that Deepak Chopra was a part of. He was on a debate. I don't even remember who it was against. But he gives an answer to a physicist who's in the audience. And he throws out the quantum possibilities of the universe experiencing itself metaphysically or some word salad of garbage nonsense that he was spitting out. And after he was done, and I think he said quantum a couple times too, and the scientist just responded and said, I understand all the words in that sentence.
Actually, I think that might have been Leonard Mlodinow, who we interviewed a few weeks back.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
I think so. Yeah, it's amazing because there's people like that who are saying nothing with a lot of words.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to make a living essentially giving poetry. They want to be treated critically as if they're artists, but they want to be respected as if they're scientists.
Yeah. So actually, I have an excerpt here. Chili's is committed to giving back to the communities in which our guests live and work through local and national give back events. While we remain committed to supporting the children and families affected by autism, we are canceling Monday's give back event based on feedback we heard from our guests. That's pretty good. Straightforward.
Great.
Yeah. It's essentially, when you say 10% of a bill, imagine how big a bill for like an Ask an Atheist post show is.
Oh, no kidding.
And then just take 10% of that?
Yeah.
There's a lot of people who are not going to eat at your restaurant.
Well, if you'd like to do some realistic math about that, you can join us after the show. 5 o'clock, we're going to be at the Harmon Tap Room again. It is an all-ages event. It's in downtown Tacoma. I suppose you could find it on Google. And have some drinks, have some appetizers, and talk about how awesome today is going. So one final email before the break. This is Phil from New Zealand. Living in New Zealand as an atheist is great. Almost no one cares. It is seen as rude to express your beliefs or lack thereof. Is it the goal you see for America, or is it something else? I want to go down the line. Start with Mike.
I don't think the goal is to make it rude for somebody to air an opinion. I think that I don't like that. I like the idea that pushing your beliefs on somebody in a way that every conversation is opt-in, not opt-out.
Yeah.
That if somebody starts pushing Jesus and I say, oh, no, thank you, then I'll just stop the conversation. It goes both ways for me to them, that if they don't want to talk about religion, they should opt out. But they shouldn't push for the sort of idea, and this is what a lot of the, I guess we call them NPR ecumenicalism.
Yes.
That everyone has a positive idea, like I believe X, Y, Z is allowed to say that, but nobody's allowed to say the opposite.
Yeah.
I think that we have a conversation, and only through being able to have a conflict of ideas can we come to anything close to the truth. And we can also weed out bad ideas. So I'd say the problem isn't so much that we want less conversation. We want more conversation, and the more conversation weeds out bad ideas.
I am in agreement. I'm a big fan of this is the only way that I'm a big fan of the free market of ideas.
Right. I think we'll be talking about that in a minute.
Every
too.
Idea should be open to talk about and open to critique. As a scientist, that's what I live for, is the process of throwing out these hypotheses and throwing out these ideas and say, you know, does this stand up to criticism? Does it stand up to testing? And if you're withholding something, if you're saying, no, my belief is too sacred to even talk about in that way, or it's rude to bring up your beliefs, then you can't actually get at the truth of the matter by discussing things, by examining things. And, truth is important to me. And I think you can't get the truth if you don't talk, you know, if you don't communicate.
I agree with you guys for the most part, but I would like to see, you know, closely held personal beliefs become more personal. If only to open up the space so that we can discuss things, you know, as a group and actually judge the merit and flaws of various ideas. It's because right now, every time we want to have a personal or a conversation about something, you know, be it healthcare or education or abortion, somebody has to jump in about how they will never budge because of their personal beliefs. And I for one, would like to have conversations more on merit than on personal beliefs. And I think in order for that to happen, it would require us to sort of pull back from this constant discussion of what I feel and what I think he said on Ask an Atheist.
I think you're absolutely right. I think that we should get out of that point of saying that there's nothing can change my mind ever.
Yeah.
That's the definition of a closed mind.
Right.
However, that doesn't mean that all ideas have equal merit and that all should be treated equally. Again, like the question of somebody wanting to put Bible stuff in the middle of a science resolution before the state of South Carolina. Mm. These things are not equal ideas. Yes, you could change my mind about evolution. You could change my mind about the way that the universe formed and everything in it. But you know you have to do that? You have to come up with better science. You can't just come up with your precious little feelings, and you can't come up with how strongly you believe it and how much you would hurt me and persecute me if you disagree. That's not the way to do it. All of my ideas are open to change. However, given this massive amount of evidence for many of these ideas, it would be incredible for you to change that. And that's what I'm welcoming. So if it sounds sometimes like atheists are unwilling to hear you out, it's because we've already had this discussion thousands
Absolutely.
Of times.
So this is Ask an Atheist, 206-420-0997. We're going to go into a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about Mozilla. Yay! And my reaction to the tech industry.
Hmm. Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
If you are a humanist, atheist, or freethinker from Everett, Washington to the Canadian border, Humanists of North Puget Sound welcomes you. Your freethought neighbors to the north have been promoting secular ideas for over 20 years. They're humanists with a rational worldview informed by science, inspired by art, and motivated by compassion. Join up for monthly conversation, camaraderie, and activism. Humanists of North Puget Sound. Visit humanistsnps.org.
Billy, I'm a certified ghost expert.
Wow, that's so credible.
Billy, your great-great-grandmother says she loves you and to give me your lunch money.
Aw, anything for family. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I know.
Ask an Atheist may have gone on the road, but we're not making big bucks.
We still need to keep the lights on, and 95% of our costs are for airtime alone.
That's why we need your contributions.
If you've got something to advertise, consider Ask an Atheist in your ad budget.
Our listener Peggy said it best. Step up and contribute to keep secular voices on the air. For $5, you could have a latte or a moment of science.
Take on Peggy's challenge and contribute today.
For details, go to askanatheist.tv or contribute directly via PayPal to paypal@askanatheist.tv.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist 206-420-0997. Got to get used to that. We actually got a radio station got a call. Daniel from Canada asks, "How can atheists help those who are grieving?" This is sort of a perennial one. I don't think we've heard you answer this one, Dan.
Actually, I think so. For me, what helps me, I've had some friends die in recent years. Is to think about the speed of light. The speed of light sort of limits how fast a thing can spread through the universe, as far as we know. And I like to think, you know, a friend of mine that died about almost five years ago, if I was at a star 7 light years away, I could look back and watch me and my friend just out fishing on a pond through an optic telescope. I could see it because the things that he did are not yet over in the universe. The particles that he deflected and sent careening off into space, the amount of gravity that he sort of exerted, and everything that has mass does exert gravitational force on everything else that has mass. So really, as an event in space-time, he's not over. He is really just starting. He is not here, but he's expanding away from here, and everything he's done is expanding away from here at the speed of light. What I have here on Earth of my friend are my memories. And they're great memories. And, you know, you can tell stories, and that's sort of a way to keep them alive here. But realistically, and this isn't something you have to believe, this is something that is tangible and testable, he is not over as a space-time event. He is continuing and will continue as the universe expands at a speed greater than the speed of light. So pretty much his effect will never be gone from this universe until this universe is over.
I think that something that gets lost in a lot of this conversation about grieving is so much of the focus gets put not on the person who's grieving, but on the person who's supposed to just step in and fix it, as if some magic combination of words is going to make them feel better or make their friend not dead. And I think that rather than coming up with a way to try to alleviate their pain, I think that the way that you really alleviate their pain is rather than to say something to them is to listen to them, because they have a lot of things they need to get off about their feelings. And sometimes just putting it into words processes that. And I know that every time I've gone through grief of some kind or another, not just a person, but like a job or a relationship or situation, that really what I need to do is talk about it. And really what you often need is somebody who's willing to listen to you without using your pain as a backdoor to push an ideology on you. And I think that if I were put in a position with somebody who was grieving, I wouldn't say, hey, this is a great opportunity to sell them a spot in heaven.
Yeah.
This is a great way to listen to them and give them an opportunity to work through their pain and bounce it off a person.
That's the sad thing, is that there are, I'm going to start with something negative. And there's a lot of people out there who think they can say something that will bring their friends back to life. It's not, they're not going to bring them back, but they you know, a lot of people do see that as prime salesmanship time. You know, imagine if it weren't a religion. Imagine if it were television. You know, your friend died. How do you feel? Well, I can sell you a TV so you can watch him on TV. Yeah. And that's what it feels like to me a lot of the time.
It is
personally.
Salesmanship.
Yeah. I think it's dirty pool to attack somebody when they're at their emotional lowest.
Yeah. But how do I help a grieving person? I'm never very good at answering this question, because grief is so personal. I mean, everybody grieves in a different way. There are the stages of grief, but if you look at them, they're so broad, and human experience is so varied, and they can manifest themselves in so many different ways. To really effectively answer this question, I'd need to know how the person was grieving.
The relationship with the person that they're grieving could be complicated as well.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, sometimes it's a parent, but it's a parent where, like, a really good example, Nate Phelps.
Yeah.
Lost his father recently, Fred Phelps. That's a complicated relationship. You can't come together with some easy way to try to console him.
Right.
Because his relationship with his dad was complicated. He thinks his dad was a hate monger and all these terrible things, but it's still his dad.
Right.
So can you come up with a Hallmark card version of making him feel better? I doubt it.
We have a follow-up here. How can I comfort someone who knows I'm an atheist and that my prayers don't mean anything to the person uttering them? His wife deals with people at the end of life, and she feels tremendous loss and grief for her clients and their families. Well, I don't pray for people who are dying. And I talk about them, and I try to make their memory as vivid as possible. Like when my grandmother died 15 years ago now, we went out to her favorite Mexican restaurant and ordered a gin and tonic for her and set it right at her place at the table where she usually sat. And we told stories about it. And for a while, it was like she was right there. I talk about how they affected life because, you know, okay, there's the physical thing that you're talking about, how the, as a quantum event, they continue.
Yeah.
But there's also the social event. I am
Absolutely.
Who I am because of the people who were in my life.
And every social interaction and in fact, every financial interaction that they affected, you know,
yeah.
Everything they bought, every person that they talked to. All those interactions are still happening. They were a part of that chain, and the event continues.
But you already made that point. My point is they are part of the social fabric that makes humans humans, whether or not it exists in some sort of physical substrate. If you go to a funeral for an atheist, which I've done a couple times, you know, we don't talk about how everybody's sorry. We don't say that they're going to have this great afterlife. We tell stories about the great thing this person did, or this one time when they nearly stapled their leg to a train track, we keep them alive
system.
In our memories because we are, in many ways, our memories.
Well, that's all we really are, is we're the way that we put a stamp on each other. And it's sad when you realize that somebody's not going to put any new stamps on you. And that the effects of their life are going to live on in you. But their ability to make new changes to your life are really, really limited. You can only find out new things from other people when they can affect you. But in the end, I think when I hear somebody tell somebody that they're in heaven now and they're all this, and this is why I get really angry about non-religious people who after the fact at their funeral get a lot of stuff like that because they're getting in the way of my grieving right now.
Yeah.
I want to remember that person as they are and go through that catharsis with all these other people who knew that person, not have this complete stranger up there tell me a bunch of D&D fairy tales.
Try to tell me that my friend is now sitting on a cloud playing the harp.
I don't care about any of that stuff.
Mine
that doesn't help me.
I would have hated that.
The way to deal with death is not to pretend that it didn't happen.
Yeah. So we do have this news story we really should cover given what I did last week about Mozilla. I do need to point out that during the last week, Brendan Eich, the guy who gave money to Proposition 8 and then later was promoted to CEO of Mozilla, is no longer CEO of Mozilla. He stepped down due to pressure, which I think is a good thing. So I everything I said about Mozilla, I don't take back because I didn't say anything bad. I said, please fix this problem. And I actually wrote on my blog post, to me, fixing the problem wasn't necessarily getting rid of the guy. There were other ways to do it. That wasn't my perfect solution. However, Andrew Sullivan fears that the LGBT rights stuff will be just as bad as the religious right. After an outcry by gay rights supporters that drove Mozilla CEO Brendan Eich to resign, columnist Andrew Sullivan is not happy. Sullivan, himself a gay conservative, worries that the LGBT movement risks becoming just like the religious right. Sullivan attacked the backlash against a guy who had the gall to express his First Amendment rights in favor of Prop 8 in California by donating $1,000. He goes to say, if this is the gay rights movement today, hounding our opponents with a fanaticism more like the religious right than anyone else, then count me out, he concluded. If we are about intimidating the free speech of others, we are no better than the anti-gay bullies who came before us. Now here's the thing. This is what I have been fighting. I honestly have not gotten such negative feedback for anything I have personally said in the history of the show, which makes me think I'm not saying enough. Maybe I need to be a little bit. Yeah, maybe I need to insult people. You're a jerk.
I am.
And, what the argument always comes down to is this guy's just exercising his First Amendment rights. How dare you exercise your First Amendment rights in response? Every argument I have heard from everyone, even people who I think wouldn't make that mistake, I didn't want him put in jail. I didn't even want him fired. What I said was, I don't like that Mozilla did this, and as a result, I am not working with them until that changes. And I work on Mozilla code. I use Firefox. I use Thunderbird. I'm working on projects for Firefox OS. This is not a small thing to me.
This is not just a question of something that he said or something that he feels. This is something that he did.
Yeah.
I know that somebody on some Fox News show last week made some remark to the degree of, well, it's hypocritical of people to get angry at him during 2008 making this donation to Prop 8 at the same time being for President Obama, who at the time was against gay rights. No, there is a key difference. Yeah, he was against gay rights because, of course, cowardly politician. A lot of people were in that boat at the time who have since changed their mind. One thing that Brendan Eich has not done. Two, President Obama, even though he had a bad political position at the time, wasn't actively giving money to prevent people from gaining equal rights.
This
he had a bad political position. He wasn't part of the barrier.
I will say that it's speech and that he has the freedom to say it. I have always said it. But the thing is, it was public speech. This is public speech. This isn't a privately held belief. This was a publicly held belief. This was a political belief.
And he's absolutely got freedom of speech. You can say anything you want. And if it's legal, you know, if you want to fund Prop 8, you can fund Prop 8. But here's the thing about freedom of speech is it comes with a caveat. You are not free from the consequences of your speech.
Yeah.
If you go around saying awful things, your freedom does not keep people from reacting to those awful
things. And that's the thing is, I heard people saying, well, so much for the marketplace of ideas. Well, here's the thing.
This is
there's
the
a shop in the
ideas.
Marketplace of ideas. The old boss leaves. A new boss comes in who says things I don't like. I go there. He says things I don't like. He won't stop doing it, or at least he won't say why he did this damage. I just don't shop there anymore. And then I tell other people that I don't shop there anymore, and other people who feel as I do don't shop there anymore. And then suddenly their business goes down and they have to change their ways in order to get the business back. This is the free market at work. And now that it's the conservative you know, moral majority folks on the wrong end of that who are saying, you know, oh, we're just, you're just as bad as the religious right now.
No.
This is a completely different thing.
What they want is a monopoly, not the free market. They want the free market to be their market with their rules, which is not a free market at all.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about just as bad, because this is something that's thrown at atheists. We're just as bad as them, too.
Yeah.
You know the real crime of those anti-gay bullies that Andrew Sullivan talked about? Their biggest crime wasn't hurting feelings. Their biggest crime wasn't running a business and saying things that offended people, because at the time they would try to throw them out of the job for saying, hey, gay people are human.
Yeah.
No, the worst crime they did is, let me give you two words, Matthew Shepard. And he wasn't the only case. We're talking about actively trying to keep people from sharing in the same rights as everyone else, if not outright killing them.
I'm not going to put Matthew Shepard on everybody. I'm not going to put Matthew Shepard on the Prop 8 people. But here's what I am going to say. I was angry at one specific person for doing one specific thing. We're talking about a group of people who are trying to take the rights away of an entire class of people who they don't know for no reason other than their storybook told them to.
Yeah, but what I'm saying, he's saying this big category of just as bad, and just as bad has gotten less bad over the years because people have become more cognizant of the fact that these people are human.
That's another one, yeah.
But it doesn't mean that the anti-gay bigotry, the same kind of bigotry and mindset taken to a different extreme, does lead to violence and has for a long time. Those anti-gay bullies used to storm nightclubs and beat the crap out of people with batons.
Yeah.
They drag people behind pickup trucks. They would destroy your life. They would torch your house. There is no one on the LGBT movement who is doing that to Pat Robertson, who they have a lot more of a beef with than any one of them that crowd had with a gay person.
That's a point I will absolutely follow. Yeah, I'll absolutely fall in line with.
I never see this getting as bad. You're just as bad as that.
Yeah.
On what level is somebody in the LGBT movement? They didn't throw him out of – they didn't try to pressure to get rid of this guy because he was anti-gay. It's because he's actively giving money to – movements that are trying to make them and keep them second-class citizenship.
Absolutely. And that's the thing, is you can't have an open source movement as people, or a free software movement as people are talking about it, if you have unequal people. Meritocracies don't work if you have second-class citizens. And unfortunately, that's all the time we've got for today. My name is Sam Mulvey. With me today was Dan Lombardo and Mike Gillis. We're going to the post-show at Harmon Tap Room. I'd like to thank Becky and Sharon, our production assistants at the station. You can go to our website at askanatheist.tv or leave us a voicemail at 206-420-0997 or email us at questions at askanatheist.tv. It's been fantastic. I'm loving this new season. See you next week. Oh, that was fantastic. Oh, I loved how that worked. Oh, man. I was really happy with your moment of science, too. Everything worked. Everything worked. Oh.
Is this your everybody lives moment?
This might be my everybody lives moment, yeah.
Great show.
How did it sound on the air?
Fine.
Everybody. Oh, that's so great. Oh, man.
It didn't sound any different than being in the studio.
I can't wait to shut this thing down.